Vinny Those. That's California for welcome to this special Halloween edition of National Review's Radio Free California podcast. I'm Will Swaim, president of the California Policy Center. You can find my colleagues and me at californiapolicycenter.org. You can find my friend and co-host David Bonson right here across the table. He's an economist, an author, the host of the Capital Record podcast, and of course, founder of the eponymous investment firm, the Bonson Group. Hello, David.
Well, how are you?
I'm a little rattled and maybe have too much or too little caffeine. I can't tell. We'll know in a moment.
But you just made a coffee, right?
I did. We're going to find out, unless you make me snort it into the microphone. We are going to talk a little bit about, or maybe a lot of bit, about the attack on Nancy Pelosi's husband, Paul. But before we do that, just hang on for that for one moment. We have a gigantic backup on letters. It's all my fault. I try to squeeze these in each week, and we just don't make the time for it. But we're going to run through a few of them right here. Here's Jeff Walden talking about the LA City Council story. You remember this one? This is about the secret tape leaked that has three council members and head of the Labor Federation yakking about other ethnic groups in disparaging terms.
And by the way, those other two didn't end up resigning, right?
They have not resigned.
Yeah.
De Leon and Cedillo.
But remember, White House press secretary said we kick people out in our
party. That's right. Yeah, but
so in a way that head city councilwoman, she did say the most stuff.
She did. She was the ringleader. Yeah,
but then she fell on the sword for the others.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other guys say they didn't say anything bad.
No, one of them did. It was what's his name who said he kept getting out of the meeting.
Yes, that was Cedillo.
What's his first name?
Gil.
No.
No, the other one, Kevin De Leon.
Kevin is the one who said, yeah, I wasn't in the meeting. I'd get up and I'd come back in and I'd hear things. And
yeah.
It was Kevin.
Okay, thank you for clarifying it. You got a better memory than I do. But anyway, Jeff Walden, listener. Thank you, yeah. Jeff. He wrote in regarding the LA City Council. He's with a well-known Jewish Holocaust joke, he says. An anti-Semite claims the Jews caused the war. The reply was, yes, the Jews and the bicyclists. The anti-Semite is confused. Why the bicyclists, he asks. Well, the other one says, why the Jews? So there we go. That's our Yiddish humor. Steve Austin was writing about Joan Didion, who we talked about a few weeks ago, remembering that she was memorialized recently in New York City because her death during COVID didn't have the real fanfare that I think a lot of people wanted to give her. But anyway, Steve writes, great shout out on Didion, who I think transcended left-right politics, much like, say, Tom Wolfe did. She no doubt ran in Vanity Fair, Hollywood Democrat circles, think Paul Newman, Warren Beatty. But looking back now, their beliefs were pretty tame. A commitment to civil rights, anti-Vietnam War, poverty relief. They loathed Nixon, hard to argue with, right? So she would clearly and loudly call out the hypocrisy and moral turbulence around us today. He writes, and there's where Steve gets a little personal. I lived in San Diego in the Navy and later in pre-riots LA and Melrose and the Valley. I have fond memories. There were still vestiges of a kind of laid-back innocence, a sunny, friendly, optimistic, hey, I'm broke, but the beach is free kind of vibe. The state had just voted for George H.W. Bush. Immigration meant pretty Mexican girls. The music, K-Rock, Richard Blade, the Roxy was startling for a boy from coastal Maine. He goes on, and I just want to say that over the weekend, my wife forced me to sit down and watch a movie called Licorice Pizza. Have you heard of this, David?
I have not.
Lucas has. Lucas has seen it. This is a movie about L.A. in the early 70s, I think 1972. And, of course, the name...
I lived it, man.
I know you did,
yeah,
almost.
I was born in 74.
Right. This just proves that, you know, we're all alive, even before birth. But in any case, Licorice Pizza is a reference, of course, to vinyl records. There used to be a big record store chain.
Do
you remember this?
Licorice Pizza was an orange.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't have a lot to do, as far as I could tell. I was sort of in and out of the meeting and not paying close attention. I kid. But the movie was fantastic because it really does capture this. I mean, it could have taken place in a lot of places, but the setting in L.A. is really evocative. 1972. Recommend the film highly. Listener Rory Tyler Hayford says that he has to object to my characterization of Rage Against the Machine as post-punk. That was in episode 245, so about a month ago. The term post-punk typically refers to groups who emerged from the immediate aftermath of the punk movement and played a more cerebral and avant-garde form of the genre. He cites groups like Wire, Joy Division, and Public Image, and that's certainly true. Thank you for that. He could mention that he says we could mention that he is our number one fan in Cambodia, David, to demonstrate that the podcast Global Appeal isn't limited only to Uganda.
Yeah, but he says he's not from Cambodia originally.
That's right.
And so what's going on at their border? I mean, their immigration is out of control.
They're just letting people in.
God. Build the wall and have Laos pay for it.
I think you're onto something there.
Is Laos still a country?
Yes. Isn't it? Wait. Lucas, look it up for us, would
you? Google.com.
That's funny. You don't hear about Laos anymore.
No. It's big.
Yes. It was vast. I think of it in... It is. Okay, thank you. Gosh, I feel really embarrassed.
I have so many friends there. If it was gone, I would have been very upset.
Yeah, that would have been really embarrassing.
Okay, so he was not... He's from Cambodia.
Well, he's there now, but he's clearly into... Yeah. Mm. Name like this.
It's interesting because... we've talked about, and he's making a joke about, which is fun, about our Uganda ratings have gone up. And,
yeah.
And, you know, I've been following this both for the Radio Free California and then my other podcast, Capitol Record.
Right.
And there's been an explosion of interest in Capitol Record in both Australia and UK.
Hmm.
And we have seen quite an interesting increase in, some Asian countries, some African countries. And the rating move higher is big. I don't know if that means it went from two people to four people, but I don't think so. I think it's more than that. And so if we have, what are these kind of expats that went to Cambodia?
Yeah.
Now, he didn't get rid of his American citizenship.
I didn't ask.
So that's interesting. We have someone who I presume with a name like that was born in America and is now in Cambodia.
Yeah.
And is schooling you on the right classifications of what raising
post-punk.
Its machine would be.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. So he's saying Wire, Joy Division, Public Image. I mean, I don't know.
I can see Public Images.
I see people trying to refer to Rage as more that fusion of when rap and hardcore were blended with certain pop sensibilities.
Right.
But if I remember correctly, Rage had been around a long time before they became popular.
Yes.
And that's what happened. That's what, like, on the only Southern California music aficionados like you and me know, is most of these bands that the rest of the nation ended up hearing about, they heard about them like 12 years later, No Doubt.
Yes.
And
who were playing up in Anaheim at the
714
Club.
Yeah. They were Goodies and Fullerton, you know, stuff like that. Remember all that? North Orange County had quite a scene of clubs. I'm going to throw up if we keep talking about this stuff.
Okay. Well, let me move on because we've got, speaking of throwing up, we talked about fast food. You might remember a few weeks back, and Sean writes in, while you guys normally sound like Charlie Brown's parents when you start talking about football, we're guilty, and off-topic things like AOC, I did perk up when you started talking about fast food.
Oh, it's interesting. So it's okay if we talk about what we want to on our own podcast. As long as it's fast food that you're interested in. Thank you, Sean.
So he says he's well-versed in fast food, as he has spent 2 years under COVID getting food wrapped in paper tossed to me through a drive-through window. He learned what...
Hey, Sean, just FYI, they've reopened the kitchen in your house.
Yes, but he's also, he has experience now in fast food, is all he's saying. He did his 2 years. And he learned that, here's my favorite line, I've learned that what works while eating on the road is mostly burritos and wraps, and what doesn't is spaghetti salad, and most anything described as healthy. And we mentioned that, at least I said, Del Taco is my
favorite.
Thank
God for that.
Yeah.
Because that's where you can be like, I don't want to eat another salad or a poke bowl.
That's right.
And so I would like to have a steak burrito, and I'm in my car. I have to do
it. You must do it.
Sean is exactly right about
this. Sean is exactly right. And Sean wants us to go try out a place up in North Orange County. And for those who don't live within, driving distance of Stanton something.
I thought there was one in Fountain Valley, too, that is now since closed. So
this is the Noggles?
He doesn't go into the history, though.
No.
He's acting like it's just a new thing.
Noggles, tacos, and burgers. Talk to us then, because I don't know anything about it.
Oh, Noggles was a huge chain in the 80s.
Okay.
And it was delicious. And there was one at Barranca. You're in Irvine. I never know where you are in Irvine.
Yeah.
What neighborhood are you in
Turtle
Irvine?
Rock.
Okay, so this was in Woodbridge.
I live next door to Nancy Pelosi. This will become relevant in a moment. No,
okay.
I'm kidding.
I grew up between Turtle Rock and Woodbridge in a neighborhood that used to be called Culverdale.
Yeah.
There was a Noggles at Barranca and East Yale Loop by the
I know where that was.
And
okay.
It was delicious. But what he's referring to, there is one in Stanton. I haven't gone because I don't go to Stanton. But there was one that opened in Stanton and Fountain Valley as like a retro thing. Like we're bringing back the glory days of Noggles. And
was this just a local chain, do you know? Or was it like California?
I think it was California, but it was a big deal. It was good.
Listeners, let us know. Was there a Noggles near you? Is there one?
Well, and Del Taco bought Noggles, so it couldn't have been national. Because okay. Del Taco was and is only regional.
Right, right.
And, well, and I mean, did it go to Phoenix or Vegas? Maybe, but it was Western region for sure.
Yeah.
And Del Taco ended up buying Noggles.
Okay.
Noggles went away. Now that someone has brought it back and he's saying go up Irvine to Stanton off the 22.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, I would need a helicopter.
Yeah.
To do that.
That's not a ride for you. He offers us menu choices. One of my favorite letters came from a guy named Ken Chang. Now, do you know this person?
Did he say you could use his name?
He did.
I do know Dr. Chang.
And he wrote that regarding our fast food tastes, he was listening apparently. And he said, just to let you know, David, that I'm happy you haven't had fast food in months, especially the McRib sandwich. And yes, I was listening.
Now, do you know who Dr. Chang is?
No.
He's Dr. Barkey's partner.
Oh my gosh, no kidding.
Yeah, and my doctor, Dr. Bloom. So there's three of them, and they have a really successful medical practice and are three of the greatest doctors in Orange County and three of the nicest people you could hope to meet.
Oh, that is so sweet. All right.
So what, is he giving me a hard time?
No, he's
happy.
He's approving. He's giving you an attaboy.
No, really, Dr. Bloom would be happy too. I sent him a bunch of results. Cholesterol's way down, blood pressure's down, weight's
down. You do look good.
Everything's going really well, but the McRib has not been seasonal. And as he points out, you know, the McRib is going to, I mean, look, I'm not going the holidays without McRib. I wouldn't do that to Christmas. You could argue it'd be unfair to Jesus. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
Thank you, Dr. Chang. All right.
There's something biblical there, too, with ribs and Adam and Eve. Okay,
well, a lot of questions.
Yeah. I'm just going to run off this last one. This is from TK Small, who is just a wonderful listener in New York. Listen regularly. Hey, TK. He is referring to Assembly Bill 257. That's the one in which the state legislature and then Gavin Newsom approved a bill, which is now a law, which sets up what's called sectoral bargaining in the fast food industry. So there's your segue, fast food. And this accomplishes for unions in California what they could not accomplish on their own, namely the organization by force. This is coerced representation on the part of the state. The state now declares itself through a commission it will establish to be the labor representative of anybody who works in a fast food joint. So TK says, about 7 years ago, New York State passed a wage increase for fast food workers, and it was at that point that I knew the economy of the home care industry was about to be disrupted. Now, he works in the home health care industry. This, in turn, spreads over to other parts of the low-skilled economic labor force. Here's how it worked, he says. Prior to the fast food wage increase in New York, the people I was attempting to hire were paid at roughly 50% above the federal minimum wage. Relatively speaking, then, I had a slight advantage in recruiting. With the unofficial minimum wage being around $15, people with complex disabilities like myself can only offer a wage slightly above the national average. Predictably, the quality of potential employees has declined dramatically. So if you start to monkey, if the government starts to monkey with wages at the lower end, just say in fast food, it has a ripple effect into other industry spaces like those that affect our friend TK Small.
But why wouldn't it?
He's saying that too.
But this is Friedrich Hayek taught us with the knowledge problem that people most proximate to a business decision or most qualified to make it is they are the man on the scene. They have time and place circumstances. So someone in home healthcare can hire around home healthcare. Someone in the food and beverage industry can hire around that. And there's nuances and there's sudden shocks to the system and there's adjustments. People can adjust that. Central planners can't. But when central planners come in and pre-act and implement a strategy or an idea or a policy, it ends up affecting all of these things, and it takes away the ability of individual actors who are most qualified to act to do so. So this is just economics 101. There's no free lunch. You say, okay, good, we got more wages in the fast food industry. I would argue, apart from TK's very important point, that you did not get more payment in the fast food industry. You get a higher wage for less people, but the labor productivity in fast food is way down. You got a lot of kiosks. You got a lot of people typing on an iPad. That's what you've done.
Right. You've automated.
You've
forced automation.
Via incentives, because human beings are rational and they respond to incentives. But then the trickle effect, because there's a competitive wage set, and you've now, you said monkeyed with, but the more, you know, academic term, you've distorted markets.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
And I think that that's a great point that he makes. And I also would argue that it happens every single day in some way or shape or form.
Yeah.
Via government interventions in the market. They lack the knowledge, they lack the incentives, and central planning is always and forever in a tension with risk takers. And Will Swaim and I and the California Policy Center and National Review stand on the side of risk takers.
Love it. Thank you. All right, so here's the big story this week, and I am almost chagrined to bring it up because it feels like
about
mine.
Elon Musk. I heard that. I heard he bought Twitter. Have you heard about this?
No.
Yeah. There's
I don't even
a story
know who this
about
guy
it.
Is. Who are you talking about?
Elon Musk has a car company called Ford.
Okay.
That he or it's Tesla.
Okay.
And
some kind of car
he
company.
Bought Twitter.
Right now, there are 10 people reaching for their smartphones to text us or email us to tell us that we don't know who Elon Musk is.
Yeah. So should we make clear we do?
Yeah. I don't know.
All right. So that story we've already done enough, but we want to go to another story that has been not overdone. It's a big story in a lot of ways, but we haven't covered it yet. And I have a feeling you're going to cover it better than the people that I've been reading have covered it.
Well, we're talking, of course, about the hammer-wielding insane person who attacked Nancy Pelosi's husband, Paul, in their San Francisco home just a couple of days ago. We're recording this on Monday, Halloween Day. We wanted to get this in early for a whole bunch of reasons, one of which is this story is really important to talk about. And I think it has direct impact on our understanding of California, but also national politics. And it has been fascinating to me, David, to watch people on the left and people on the right very quickly try to make this a Democrat or a Republican issue. So if you are a Democrat, as one of my neighbors is, this immediately, of course, is evidence of Trump extremism. And that's certainly what you see in a lot of the national coverage. So we've got, let me see if I can find my stories here. We've got the Washington Post talking about, it's coming, here it is. Pelosi, here we go. Nope.
You'll have to forgive Will as he looks for the Washington Post piece on Pelosi, but the Washington Post has so many pieces in the
true.
Way about conservatives and about past.
That's all this is.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. This is embarrassing. Okay, so here, let's go with this one. This is a fair one. So there were a bunch of stories in the Washington Post, each one of which has this basically as just the Republicans. It's almost like there's an election coming and they have to get the story in here for late voters. Here's one headline. Attack on Nancy Pelosi's husband follows years of GOP demonizing her. It follows a whole bunch of stuff, to be fair.
And by the way, the demonizing is that a lot of people criticized her.
That's right.
And then yes. And then there's some nutballs that say worse things than criticism.
Yes, that's exactly right. Okay. So they have graphs in here about Republican spending on campaign
ads.
I'm
so tired of the nutpicking. Yeah. Nutpicking is a form of lying.
It is. It
it's
is
a form
total
of lying.
Misrepresentation. But this is an attempt on their part to appear very scientific. The thesis statement is right here. It's about three, four paragraphs in. The years of vilification culminated Friday when Pelosi's husband, Paul, was attacked with a hammer during an early morning break-in at the couple's home in San Francisco by a man searching for the speaker and shouting, "Where is Nancy? Where is Nancy?" according to someone briefed on the assault.
Now, by the way, when someone, and maybe you're about to read it, and I've read it in multiple left-wing news out coverage, drew a parallel from "Where is Nancy" to the lunatics on January 6th that said, "Where is Pence?"
Right.
I think that's fair journalism. The fact of the same words.
Yeah, sure, okay.
Where we're going with this is going to be grotesquely unfair.
That's right.
But I'm just saying, this notion of someone, I would say that the people showing up to say, "Where is Pence?" that was a deplorable moment. And it was a lot of people.
Yeah.
And they were fed a bunch of misinformation to get him there. And there was total culpability of people on the right involved in that incident. Those people were not, that's not nutpicking. I think it's 370. That's a lot of people. And they were you would argue. Anyways, I should let you finish. I'm just simply going to point out, because I'm about to agree with you 100% on where I think we're going on the Pelosi thing, but that the thing what was done with Pence on January 6th, that's an utterly frightening moment.
That's right. I agree.
Yeah, they would have killed him.
That's right. And I haven't forgotten where I was standing when I first saw it on a television in a friend's office. You and I both know these people. We were all in there watching, and it was like, I turned around and I said, do you see what's happening? It was insanity on stilts.
But I did not believe 24 hours later, 48 hours later, that we would be subject to the just disgusting revisionism from people that are kind of sometimes friends of ours.
Yeah.
On the right.
Yeah.
That have now said January 6th was a few people, half of them were Antifa.
Right.
Plants.
Yeah.
And then a couple
the
people, yeah. The security let them in, and they were just coming in to kind of get a photo taken on Pelosi's desk. There were some serious violent lunatics there that were trying to kill Vice President Pence.
That's right.
That's a fact.
Yeah. So we can agree on that. And we can agree, like, you know, it almost has to be said now in this political environment. This is awful. You know, like, what happened to Paul Pelosi is terrible. You wouldn't wish this on your worst enemy, seriously. It is awful. Paul Pelosi's not my worst enemy. But it's awful. It's disgusting. Godspeed to him and his recovery. I mean, no offense to anybody, he's an older man.
And 82.
Yes. He's 82 years old, and he was handling a guy who's 42 and insane. And that's my point. This guy, this attacker, is so clearly insane, and the attempt on the left to immediately rush to judgment and say, clearly this is about Trump. So we've got, in the interest of the Wiener Watch, here's Senator Wiener's statement on political violence against Paul Pelosi. Political violence, right? It's political violence.
Who's Senator Wiener? Oh, the one in California.
Scott Wiener, our Scott Wiener.
I always forget, because Anthony Wiener is so much more famous,
yeah.
And that guy's been gone for so long. I was like, is Anthony Wiener jumping in when a guy in his underwear shows up in the... And he's like, okay.
This is my beat. Everybody back. We're talking about naked men. Senator Scott Wiener released the following statement. This is from a press release from his staff regarding the attack on Paul Pelosi. Quote, this attack is terrifying and the direct result of toxic right-wing rhetoric and incitement against Speaker Pelosi and so many other progressive leaders. Paul Pelosi was brutally attacked for being married to one of the strongest Democratic leaders in our nation's history. Paul is a fantastic person, and I'm rooting for his recovery. I've experienced firsthand how right-wing political violence is on the... Right-wing political violence is on the rise in our country. The violence and threats that we as elected officials face every single day badly damage democracy and must end. Words have consequences, and without question, the GOP's hate and extremism has bred political violence. We must hold accountable leaders and public figures who incite this violence. David, words have consequences. The guy's words are violent and reprehensible. I mean this seriously. Am I reacting too strongly to Scott Wiener's statement here that somehow everybody who's a Republican now is fair game and ought to be held accountable for a lunatic in San Francisco?
No, you're completely right. It's just, though, where I would disagree with you, Will, is using him as the example. That guy is a complete nobody. I don't take him seriously.
Scott Wiener.
Yes. The Washington Post said it. They're a national premier, seriously important, historical institution, massive media reach, owned by Jeff Bezos, the second wealthiest man in the world. Scott Wiener is a nobody. And this thing of, what did he say? It is, there's one line I wanted to highlight. I've experienced firsthand. And then he had said, this attack is the direct result.
Right.
If you want to make the wrong argument here, you still have to say, you could argue this is indirectly related to,
right.
That's a bad argument.
Yes.
That's not true. You're talking about a guy with mental illness like this, who is about as, I mean, you could just go basically to any mental hospital and pull people and yell at them, do you like QAnon? And you're like, half
yes.
go, yes. And you like BLM? And half would go, yes. And then you're like, oh, this is clearly political. This dude is a nut. And they know it. They know it. And so Scott Wiener saying that he's a liar. And he is, by the way, crazy.
Yes.
Isn't he the one with the monkeypox thing?
The monkeypox thing.
And he wanted everyone to go do stuff anyways?
You can't stop love anymore.
And all
yeah,
that?
Right.
Okay, so who's doing more political violence?
Yeah.
I suggested in a period of a viral spread that was only coming from gay contact that people kind of take it easy on the 400 person orgy-like events.
I think we said
that was my idea.
We said I think keep your pants on.
Okay, but I
just for a minute.
Like,
just for a minute.
I feel like I was going out of the way to help a friend out here. And this guy was like, nope. No, you go.
You go, girl. Yeah,
well, no, not that.
No,
oh,
Yeah, in the gay community, we're allowed to say girl. I said we, like I'm part of it. Oh, yeah, come on, girlfriend.
Okay, but my point is that the far more reckless behavior is because it has reach. It sets a national narrative. Elon referred to Twitter as the electronic public square, so to speak. The media lives in a place of influence by definition.
Right.
And what the Washington Post said is so flamboyantly dishonest.
Yeah.
That I am shocked. And I have been a critic of liberal media's dishonesty my whole life. But I'm shocked at this. It's so demonstrably untrue. First of all, let's get the criticism of our own out of the way, because that's where we should start. Larry Elder's tweet was totally, completely out of
line. Remind us what Larry said.
Paul Pelosi was arrested a month ago for driving drunk. I guess that's two times in a month he's gotten hammered.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, I don't know if he took the tweet down or not. I don't know if Twitter took it down. I don't know. If he took it down, good for him. But he still said it. That kind of stuff is just gross.
Yeah.
It's gross. I don't want to be a part of it. And I refuse to not call it out.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
But then, Will, Dinesh D'Souza has now suggested that the guy was in his underwear and Paul was in his underwear and maybe they were gay lovers.
Right.
Let's go to Occam's razor here for a second. What part of you thinks that's the most plausible scenario? Now, if you think the deal sounds funny about him going in the bathroom and calling on the cell phone and 911 coming, and if you think, how did this guy get in to begin with, I'm all for it. Like, yeah, that,
ask
what
questions.
The hell?
Yeah.
Ask the questions. There happen to be answers. They're not satisfactory in the sense of, like, it obviously is a security breakdown. It obviously shouldn't happen. But it did. And unless you have an alternative, my theory of the case makes more sense.
Yeah.
Because this whole thing is obviously incredibly upsetting and not supposed to happen. But the idea that, well, Nancy's out of town, so Paul went ahead and had his normal tryst with the mentally ill nudist colony, crazy, somewhat QAnon, somewhat BLM-loving guy, and then it got a little kinky and they both had hammers and the police came?
Yeah.
That theory is more sensible to you?
No, it's not.
So whatever you believe here, there's going to be a sense of wow, what in the world, right? But I think that the left has beclowned themselves in a way that is totally unforgivable these last few days. Paul Pelosi is a victim of a violent attack. I don't want to make this political by saying, oh, this shows you crime's too high in San Francisco. Now, maybe if there is a way to stretch this into a political story, maybe that's the one. But what are we doing stretching to find a political meaning in the story when the most obvious one on the planet is right in front of us, standing in the room in their underwear?
Yeah.
A mentally ill dude.
Right.
What the hell is wrong with people?
And David, this is the simplest explanation. Like when there was a guy, 2017, I want to say, who went out, I think his name was Hodgins, who went out and shot up the Republican softball team while they were practicing for the big congressional softball match. I called it a match, like I'm watching soccer or something. You've got, this guy recently, I want to say North Dakota, ran over a 22-year-old kid who was a Republican. These are clearly people who are out of their minds. And the idea that I'm going to ascribe to all Democrats the behavior of insane people is nuts. The idea that reasonable Democrats would insult all conservatives by suggesting, see, this is where you go, Republicans, because you didn't like Nancy, so you can't say anything about the Democrats.
But what did you and I just do about Larry Elder's tweet?
We just took him down.
By the way, Larry is not a close friend of mine. Larry's someone I've met and have liked. I am criticizing someone who I consider to be in my circle of Orange County conservative-related, Southern California conservative-related circle for 30 years.
Right.
But it doesn't matter. This is not acceptable.
Right.
What happened when Rand Paul's neighbor beat the hell out of him?
Right.
MSNBC producer went on and said, "Where is Ted Cruz's next-door neighbor?" Basically, wow. Can we get Rand Paul's neighbor?
Yeah.
Okay, this is not the kind. If we want to talk about people who've responded poorly, let's do it.
Yeah,
I don't accept what Larry did, and I don't think there's that much of it that goes on. And I think with the left, that I didn't hear anyone say when Steve Scalise got shot by a Bernie Sanders fan, and they were trying to mow down 8 or 9 people, right. And they didn't realize that apparently when you plan a shooting, that the dugout, and this dude was not mentally ill, okay? He wasn't. Hmm. But there was a dugout that goes down instead of, otherwise everyone would be dead.
Oh,
like,
gosh.
There'd be a target practice, they're all above ground, and he was down low. But they were able to get
down. It was a literal dugout.
And he couldn't shoot because they were at a lower elevation. Yeah. Jeff Flake was involved, and there were, you know, a whole bunch of Republican people he was shooting at. But I don't recall anyone on the left that I can think of saying, like, that was a great thing, but they didn't cover it.
No.
They didn't cover it much.
Buried. Well, then Kavanaugh.
I would say buried. Let's be fair. Kavanaugh, they buried.
Yeah.
Rand Paul, they buried. The Steve Scalise thing got covered, but just nowhere near like this.
I'm going to say that the reason Scalise got covered is because that involved guns, seriously. And, of course, it was very high profile in D.C. where a lot of the media are. But I think that when you involve guns, there's another issue
there. And the Capitol Police were heroes there. They came and got the guy and shot him and stuff. There was some more. That story had drama to it, but they didn't cover it enough.
And, you know, Kavanaugh, very similar to the Pelosi deal, where you've got a guy who, you know, basically shows up ready to blow into Kavanaugh's house and murder him and kill his family or something.
Barely covered.
So this is not, and this is my point, and I think you share it, but my point is they're insane people. They're crazy people. I think that anybody who goes to a Republican softball practice and shoots them is insane. I don't know what the clinical...
Unfortunately, I don't agree with you, but that is a theological point. And I think maybe us Protestants are a little stronger on the doctrine of original sin than you Catholics are.
I just think, David, you got to be a little... I'm going to call it sinful.
In the immortal words of Billy Corgan, and we'll allow our... I don't remember his name to correct us on the style of music of Smashing Pumpkins. Killer in me is the killer in you. There is mental illness, and there are people who do evil things. And if someone is doing something because they're ill, that's a different category of immorality. So if we want to say at whatever point of a threshold of discomfort, that automatically the sin becomes illness because it's just too unpleasant to talk about a sin, then we've just disqualified the great evildoers in history from the potential of being frail, sinful, disgusting human beings, which is what they were.
And it might be the Catholic in me that says that if you're insane enough to pull out a pistol and shoot a bunch of people on a baseball field, you're crazy, and you still get you should still go to prison for the rest of your life. Or, in fact, if I weren't a Catholic,
you can't even go to the death penalty thing.
It's hard. It's a hard thing.
No, but
for me.
I can go death penalty on that one.
I love the Protestant church.
By the way, I would like to correct myself because it is possible. I have a very good memory, and I study these things, but I do not like being imprecise. It is possible that subsequently they discovered that there was mental illness for the guy who did the Capitol shooting. I don't recall that.
Yeah.
So if I'm wrong on that, I want to apologize.
But you're looking for a clinical distinction here, and I'm just saying...
Let's put the burden on you.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not looking for anything. I don't accept the premise that if something is evil, it must have been mental illness.
Okay, well, because for you, mental illness means an excuse and a get-out-of-jail-free card.
No, I don't. I actually have always said that. I support insanity pleas as long as they're accompanied to a guilty verdict.
Yes, exactly. So we agree on that.
But I do not believe that there... I think there are people with clinical schizophrenia and bipolar disorder and drug-induced psychosis...
Like this guy in the Pelosi case.
The notion that we believe morally that's at the same boat as someone who says, I hate my ex-wife's lover, I'm going to go shoot him and his children.
Right.
And we think that's the same thing as someone with a mental psychotic. That requires a level... And by the way, there's a sense in which... I think that it's time for people of faith to get this stuff right, to get comfortable with the distinctions. I was raised a little bit, I think, with too much of a belief that all things are purely in the moral realm and that there is no such thing as a physical or mental or psychological impairment. And I don't agree with that. I do believe that there are infirmities, and none of us believe... See, it isn't that I'm saying mental ill means, that's what I'm just trying to use proper vocabulary.
I understand.
You can't be responsible for something that you are incapable of
You're saying that mental illness really is I don't want to say escape clause, but it is an extenuating circumstance.
The problem that requires a lot of nuance and complexity, from my view, and I think we have smart listeners, so let's just keep going down this path. I'm making it more complicated as we go, and I usually like to bring things back to simplify.
Sure.
The problem is, I think most mental illness was drug induced.
In this guy's case, that seems
but
absolutely
I'm saying most
certain.
In the society.
Yeah. Yes.
And so I have a hard time saying there's no moral culpability if someone has a mental illness that there was a byproduct of their own destructive behavior, right?
Right.
But there's PTSD, and do I think, let me ask you this, do you think that there should be a distinction between the behavior of a veteran who comes back, is unemployable, is in a state of trauma, trauma-induced rage that we can't even describe, that we think that's the same moral playing field of a revenge killing or a greed killing?
No,
I mean,
you're
come
right.
on, who
you're
thinks
right.
that?
Nobody.
Now,
I hope.
Do I think that we can use mental illness as a, what was the movie with Ed Norton where he pretended to be schizophrenic to get out of death penalty or something like that?
Fight Club?
No, that wasn't Fight Club.
Was it American History X?
It wasn't. Both those are great movies. There was another one
with
Richard Gere, was the lawyer.
Now,
Fight Club is one of the great movies ever made, and American History X is a great movie, but it wasn't that or what I'm referring to. It was something specific to a guy faking mental illness. You know, all I'm telling is, we're so off the tangent here. I just think, Will, that when we refer to mental illness, we are talking about something that does involve some diminishment of the culpability. Now, what would you say you do? If I want to incarcerate someone in a mental hospital for 30 years, that sounds like a punishment to me. But it's different than the revenge killing and the greed killing and the indifference for human life killing, right? I think those things have to be separated. And you're right. This dude is clearly, primal fear.
Well done, Lucas.
You know what freaks me out the way he wrote it?
It looks like it's a hostage
like a serial
note.
Killer.
Lucas.
Like with some capitals and some small.
I don't think we're getting out of Lucas's room here.
Dear Lord. Okay, so primal fear.
Don't shoot me, Lucas.
All right, we'll all shut up.
Okay, so I'll put these stories in the show notes by Michael Schellenberger, who I think just did some of the best reporting on who this guy is. He actually goes out to this guy, and I am deliberately not referring to this guy's name because he's a cretin and I don't want to give any more publicity, but he Schellenberger went out to his house, interviewed people who lived in the neighborhood, and determines the guy's a psychotic and he suffered from homelessness for years. Former wife who says that for a full year he thought he was Jesus. This is like just right out of Central Casting insanity. And to argue that, I've actually seen a few people who say, you know, these are reporters for national publications who are tweeting out, well, you know, okay, so he was insane, that we have to clean up our rhetoric because the rhetoric might trigger people like this. No, that's a violation of the First Amendment. We cannot walk around worrying that a homeless person who's a drug addict with a history of mental illness is going to take what we say and spin it. The people pick up junk like this, the detritus of pop culture, and manufacture into their own reality all the time. And so you don't know whether it's going to be, I don't know, the TV show Friends or, you know, reading about World War II that finally triggers them. But Schellenberger just did an awesome job here. Here's the headline that tells you almost everything you need to know. Pelosi attack suspect was a psychotic homeless addict estranged from his pedophile lover and their children. It's, you know, it's just really good old style reporting. I mean, I just can't say enough nice things about it. So you and I have already talked about it.
We talked earlier about not picking as a form of dishonesty. You and I have talked in the past about the sin of omission. I think with reporting, you can be, or a human being living their life, you can lie by commission, saying something that isn't true, and you can lie by not saying something that belongs in the fact pattern. I think when you say, this guy posted QAnon adjacent stuff, and this guy posted January 6th or 2020 election stuff, and you don't say that in the same post, not elsewhere like 5 years earlier, in the same posting, he referred to how they were out to get the fairies, F-A-I-R-I-E-S.
Yes,
it wasn't
right.
a...
Yeah.
a pejorative or
no. He was talking about little winged creatures.
Yes, yeah. And that he was one.
That's right.
And that they were not doing enough for the fairy community or something. And again, we're talking. And there's a whole thing explaining it.
Yes.
This dude is bonkers.
Yeah.
And when you don't mention that and you go, oh, yeah, looks like this is a kind of QAnon Trump guy, you're just a liar.
Yeah. By that logic, Napoleon Bonaparte is in our mental institutions in multiple iterations. I'm totally with you. We could go on.
Did Napoleon Bonaparte have a thing on the fairies?
I don't think he did, but it's just all these people who believe they are Napoleon Bonaparte.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So...
what's our conclusion?
My conclusion is there are going to be insane people. They're going to do insane things, and it's incumbent on all of us to wrestle with the problem of mental illness in modern society.
Why doesn't the Speaker of the House have human security?
She does, personally, but not at her house, apparently, when she's away, it sounds.
All right. I love this idea, too, like this Trump guy, he was plotting it, he was ready to kill him, and everything. He went through all the efforts to get into the House and be in a position with a hammer. He just didn't check if Nancy was going to be there or not.
In town, that's right.
Yeah. You know who doesn't check if Nancy's going to be there? A mentally ill, drug, psychotic dude.
Yeah, a guy who ends up in a Coen Brothers movie.
You look like you're trying to move on. This is all I want to talk about.
I just know that you've got, at the top of the hour, you've got a hard stop here, and we're close. So we could go on, but because I do have, as you know and might suspect if you're a listener to the show, I have like 10 other stories I wanted to get to today. We'll get to those next week. Thanks for joining us today. David, anything else you want, or shall we move on?
So when are we going to record before or after the elections next week? We haven't plotted that yet.
That's a great
yet.
Question.
I think we're going to do it on Wednesday, the day after the election.
Let's do it after.
And I'll be in Nashville, and we'll do it remotely, and by then we'll have a lot of election results to cover.
I would love to.
Because no one's going to want to listen to us if it's before the election, and we're talking about the election, and by the time they listen, it's after the election.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, man. That's all we have time for today. You can always find this podcast on the National Review website, but it's easier for you, better for us, if you just subscribe at any of the myriad download platforms for podcasts. I don't know what the hell they call those. I'll ask Lucas later. You can follow us on Twitter at the Radio Free CA. On behalf of my friend and co-host David Bonson, we give thanks as ever to session producers Lucas Klaus, Brian Tong, Glenn Hall, researchers Sheridan Swanson and Alice Kachatri, and to all of our friends at National Review, especially the podcast producer Sarah Schutte. Thanks also to Metalachi. That's the LA-based mariachi and metal band for our music. La Revolución continúa en la semana próxima.